Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this podcast from the Omfer Sustainable Policy Institute. I'm Natalia Ospina, Deputy Head of Reports here at Omfer, and I'm delighted on this occasion to be joined by Richard Berner. Richard is Clinical Professor of Management Practice in the Department of Finance at NYU's Stern School of Business, and along with Professor Robert Engel, one of his co-authors in the paper we are going to discuss in detail in a bit today. Richard is co-director of the Stern Volatility and Risk Institute, also at NYU. Before that, well, Richard has a very impressive bio, to say the least. He has experience in the financial industry and in government. Amongst others, he served as the first director of the Office of Financial Research, which is the independent bureau within the U.S. Department of the Treasury. And he was also counselor to the Secretary of the Treasury and Managing Director. Today, we will be discussing the findings of the climate stress testing paper that Richard co-authored along with Robert Engel, which I just mentioned. He's co-director at NYU and also a Nobel Prize winner in economics in 2003, and with Hye-Yoon Yeong, economist at the New York Fed. It's a pleasure for me to have you here, Richard. And there are a lot of interesting issues to explore in this paper. But I'm going to kick off by asking Richard first, can you set the stage for us and give us some context on how climate change can impact the financial sector?
Sure. Thanks, Natalia, and thanks for the opportunity. So climate-related risks can affect the financial system and the financial instruments, firms, and markets within it in several ways. But generally, we distinguish between two types of risk. Physical risk, which is what a lot of people see, the potential economic and financial losses from climate-related hazards. And transition risk, the economic dislocation and financial losses related to moving to a low-carbon economy. So an example of physical risk would be if climate-related events like a wildfire destroy a house, then the mortgage lender and the insurer might both share in the loss. And transition risk, if the imposition of a carbon tax depresses assets values, it can turn them into stranded assets, increasing investors' credit risks. Now, I just want to say it also may seem obvious or trivial, but it's worth mentioning that both adaptation to and mitigation of climate risks will reduce the threats to the financial system in that regard, as well as helping to save the planet.
Of course. Well, I think these direct negative effects that climate change can bring into the financial sector are very important, and I'm sure we're going to dive into them in just a second. But Richard, you and your colleagues developed a climate stress test methodology to try and gauge the resilience of banks to this climate-related risks that you just described, especially the transition risk that you briefly mentioned. Could you give us an overview of how your climate stress testing methodology works and how it assesses financial institutions' resilience to climate-related risks? Perhaps maybe you can provide us with a general idea of the steps of the model and the characteristics of those financial institutions that you chose to be part of this exercise.
I want to emphasize at first that this is preliminary research and that it is ongoing. So we should regard this as a project that we're still working on. Now, our work paralleled the work we did with S-Risk, which uses market data to assess the capital shortfall of institutions in the event of a financial shock. We analyzed the largest publicly traded financial services firms, in this case, banks and bank holding companies. In C-Risk, we wanted to assess similar risks in the event of a climate-related shock. So the analysis has three steps. First, we identify a climate factor. In portfolio analysis, as you know, we analyze the sensitivity of asset returns to a broad market factor as well as other factors. In this case, the climate factor is a portfolio of coal and other fossil fuel companies, asset prices or returns. We represent the shock with a decline in the value of that factor. The second step is to estimate those sensitivities or betas for each bank to the factor along with market factors. We think that they are changing over time, so we allow the estimates to vary over time. But we do find that across banks, they move together. And the third step is we use a methodology like the S-risk methodology that accounts for the firm's size, leverage, and equity loss given the shock to calculate C-risk. We can simulate a climate shock with a sharp decline in the value of the climate factor. In this case, we use a 50% drop in the return of the climate factor over 6 months. So those are the three steps in our methodology.
Perfect. And could you describe maybe a little how was the portfolio conformed of those financial institutions that you chose?
We chose first, as I mentioned, the banks that are publicly traded. There are, in many jurisdictions, there are banks that are not listed on exchanges. So we needed to have their equity values in order to do the analysis. Second, we typically looked at the largest banks because the size of the institution is one of the factors that I mentioned that influences the impact of the shock. And third, we wanted to look at their portfolios to, if you will, corroborate the results that we have. So just to anticipate some of our results, we found that the institutions with the largest exposures to the industries and the climate factor, namely fossil fuel companies, oil and gas companies, typically had the larger impact, and conversely, those with the smallest exposure typically had a smaller impact.
Perfect. Thank you. I think that this deep dive into our model allows us to understand a bit more how it works, and actually you were just moving a bit ahead to my next question, in which I want to get you to tell us a bit more of what did the climate stress testing methodology reveal. How resilient are these financial institutions that you studied to the transition risks?
So the analysis showed that the measured C risk varied across institutions and countries. For some banks, it's substantial. For example, in the case of Citicorp, C-risk increased in response to the shock, by about $73 billion over 2020. Now, 2020 might have been an unusual year, and so that's one of the reasons we look at it over time. But it's important to note that some of that increase is general stress. It would show up in S-risk as well, our parallel measure that measures the risk, as I mentioned, to financial shocks. But if we compare the stressed and non-stressed C-risk, in other words, if we take away the drop in the climate factor that we talked about and the return of that factor, then the capital shortfall of the included U.S. banks in 2020 amounts to about $70 billion, or 20% of their capital.
Well, I guess there are some troubling news there for banks. I mean, 20% of their capital is very, very significant. And my sense is that, I mean, the worst is still to come, no? Since we haven't even seen the results that your model will reveal once you input the physical risks into the equation, since you're just focusing for now on the transition risks. And in your paper, you and your colleagues do give us a hint that this is something that you are thinking about exploring in future research as an expansion to your model, which, as you rightly put it in the beginning, is still evolving. Do you have perhaps a hypothesis on what the model will reveal once you input these physical risks? Will it perhaps increase the pool of banks with significant expected capital shortfalls? Will it maybe show a completely different set of banks that are facing significant capital impacts, other than the ones you already identified as being heavily impacted by transition risks?
Right. That's one of the things that we hope to do, to incorporate physical risk into the model so that we could analyze separately transition and physical risk. Sometimes they move together, but sometimes not. If we could develop a physical risk factor that we could include, that would extend the analysis. But not having done it, I would only be speculating on the answers to the good questions that you just raised. But I would say those are certainly some of the questions we would hope to address. Obviously, physical risk is location specific. Transition risk could be too, depending on different laws in different countries and jurisdictions. But the physical risk can be quite concentrated in particular areas. And so we'd want to take that into account in doing the analysis.
Thank you, Richard. I understand it's a bit too early to try and guess and estimate what your model will show, but I'm sure you will have a lot of eyes, including mine, looking out for the results of this expansion of your current work. And going back to the findings of your paper, one that shook me the most was, and you just mentioned it, the finding that the expected capital shortfalls of some of the banks, as Citi that you mentioned earlier, are going to be economically substantial. And if transition risks rise sharply, they could even lead to a significant increase in systemic risk. I think this is a completely other level when you come to warning signs. What impact do you think this finding could have in terms of existing capital requirements? I mean, has the time come to force at least those lenders that have similar portfolio compositions or similar characteristics as the ones that you chose for your test to top up their general capital buffers, or is it too early to tell as well?
Well, first of all, thanks for mentioning the fact that, you know, this could be an early warning sign. And we designed this methodology to be, as was S-Risk, a complement to traditional stress testing. So it has several advantages in that regard. But I do think, and I can talk about those, but I do think it's premature to say what the impact on existing capital requirements would be. And that's partly because this work is preliminary. And I think it's certainly not what any regulator should or would use to judge what capital requirements should be. But I do think it's important to note that if a bank is resilient to financial and other shocks, it seems likely it will also be resilient to climate-related shocks. And conversely, in any case, that will be a decision for the authorities. And they've made it pretty clear, not just in the United States, but in other jurisdictions, including Europe, that it's premature to be discussing changing capital requirements until we know more. We have better analytical tools and better data.
I understand. I also have sensed a lot of a hesitation within the many central banks that we've spoken to about this climate stress test and their results. We had in the SBI symposium, we had the Central Bank of England, the Central Bank of France discussing their stress test, and they also were very cautious in like generalizing and making changes in such a bitter subject as for financial institutions as capital requirements is. So yeah, I hope then that this analysis and further studies can come soon so that we can actually see if the capital requirements that are currently in place are enough to deal and to try and withstand this climate shocks, especially if they come along with other macroeconomic shocks at the same time, which is what one would expect. But now, now that I mentioned the ECB on our SPI symposium earlier this last month, on the same month as your paper came out in September, the ECB also published its economy-wide climate stress test, which revealed they did some modeling of what would happen in 30 years in different climate scenarios, but one of their conclusions showed that the most significant impact on banks' losses would come from physical risk, and that these losses are potentially severe if policies to try and combat climate change are not well calibrated and implemented promptly. Now, although I realize that all of these stress tests are different, the ECB one is different from the model that you and your colleagues did, I think that both point to a direction that clearly shows that there's going to be an imminent impact that climate change will have on financial institutions. So, and as you just mentioned, if it's too early to talk about changes in capital requirements, then what would be your call to policymakers and regulators? What would you expect them to do in light of this scenario? And more generally, perhaps, what do you think banks should also take from these exercises?
So I think our call for policymakers and regulators is to continue work at developing the data and analytical tools needed to identify and measure climate-related risks. Everything I hear leads me to think that they're moving in the right direction. I think that banks and their boards are also taking notice and thinking hard about both physical and transition risks. So in that respect, banks and their supervisors, I think, are aligned because they both recognize the risk. But the key point is not just to identify and analyze. Risk management, and that's really what this is about, involves communicating and deciding on action steps. Before they take those action steps, however, as we just talked about, supervisors and banks need to do more work to understand the nature of the risks.
No, I completely agree, and I really hope that policymakers, regulators, and banks in general roll up their sleeves and start developing these analytical tools, as you rightly call them, to make sure they are constantly and more importantly, adequately monitoring the impacts that climate change can have in their portfolios and their capital buffers, and embed them, as you rightly point out, in their risk management procedures. Now, a bit earlier this year, we also saw that the Bank of France and the Authority of Prudential Control and Resolution, the APCR in France, they also performed a climate pilot exercise, very different from yours and the ECB, to assess the implications of both physical and transition risks. And they chose to do so on 9 banks and 15 insurance companies, also doing some climate scenarios in the next 30 years. And particularly in terms of transition risk, which is the one that your model already embeds, the exercise revealed that French institutions have a relatively low exposure to the high-emitting sectors that would be impacted the most by green transition. So I just wonder, what does your model reveal about the readiness of the French financial institutions and their exposure to transition risk particularly? And how do you think your findings could perhaps feed into future exercises that the French authorities are thinking and developing?
So readiness has several dimensions, and our model speaks only to estimates of capital shortfalls resulting from climate-related stress, in this case, as you mentioned, transition risk. Our model suggests that marginal sea risk, that is the difference between the stressed and the non-stressed sea risk, in 2020, for the 3 French banks we analyzed, BNP, Soc Gen, and Crédit Agricole, adds up to about 35 billion euros at current exchange rates. Now, that's an estimate from our model, which, again, I want to point out, is ongoing research. But our point would be that if these estimates tell a different story from that in the pilot exercise that was done by the Central Bank of France, we should work to understand what accounts for the differences. Because if we come at a problem and get 2 different answers, then we should understand what is the source of those differences. If they gave us the same answer, that might give us some comfort that we're headed in the right direction using different methodologies. Either way, that will help shed some light on the strengths and weaknesses of our work and theirs. Now, I would point out that our approach has a few advantages that traditional stress tests, if you want to call them that, really might not have. And that's one of the reasons that ours is complementary. First, it's timely based on market data, so we can update it frequently. Second, we can aggregate because the units of shortfall are measured in a common currency, either dollars or euros, whatever it is. In our case, we do most things in dollars. And so we can aggregate them across the institutions in the jurisdiction. Third, the cost is pretty low. While we put a lot of effort into estimating this model into our analysis, it doesn't require the detailed granular approach that stress tests legitimately have done for other purposes. And our approach, at least with S-risk, has shown that the risk rankings, if you will, are quite similar to those that are produced by traditional stress testing methodologies. And so, again, this is a complement to that work, and we look forward to working with those institutions to understand what those differences might be and how we can come together. And we have talked to many of them, both in the United States and in Europe and elsewhere, about collaboration to look at exactly those questions.
Thank you, Richard. And I think the point you just raised is a very important one. I think all of this process, and perhaps that this is, I understand the main goal of the NGFS is to acknowledge that this is a collaboration process and that we are still learning from all of these impacts of climate change and what they are revealing. So acting in collaboration with the different authorities is for sure something very important to try and make these models more robust. And thank you also for highlighting all of those benefits that the model has. I really think that indeed it's a very robust model and it has many benefits that others out there don't. As you mentioned, just the fact that it can be computed, that the C-risk can be computed using publicly available data is really, really helpful, and that it can reflect actual and current market conditions is makes it really useful, and it also makes it a very adaptable and, as you mentioned, not costly model to use. I hope that the French authorities and, in general, the other central banks and regulators that are looking into creating their own models to test the resilience of their financial sector can have a close look into your model and continue these conversations with you and your colleagues to try and improve this climate stress testing. And, well, I think that this is a great note on which to end this podcast. So thank you, Richard, for this fascinating discussion and deep dive into your model and the conclusions that your stress testing revealed. I really look forward to hearing from you again soon. And thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as we did. Have a lovely afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalia, for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.